Hello, I'm your host, Jim McLean. Welcome to a brand new series of the Banterflix Movie Review Podcast. We have reverted back to our original name. Not even Warner Brothers could scrap this podcast. A fire alarm nearly did, but we'll not talk about that. But we're back and we're in the studio for, I think, the first time in about two and a half years. It has been a long time since I've physically sat in a room with another person with a microphone and discuss movies. But we're doing that today. We've got a lovely studio and I'm joined by local filmmaker Adam Neeson.
Hi, Jim.
Adam, how are you? You're our first guest on this brand new reworked podcast that is a kind of very similar to what we've done before, but it's the all new and improved Banterflix podcast. This is like when Take That, after they broke up and they got back together again, they kind of split up again and they got back together and they toured for a while and they split up. This is like Take That now. Just pretty much just Gary now. Robbie's gone. The other ones are gone. But are you excited?
We'll relight that fire, Jim. Is that a Take That song?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you got
yeah,
that there.
I got it. Can I do Jason Orange?
Jason Orange. If anyone can possibly text in, we're not a live show, but if you want to email us in, the other members of Take That who I have forgotten. There was Jason. There was Robbie. Mark. Gary, Mark Owen, and I think that was it.
Yeah.
I think it's just Mark and Gary now. I think Jason Orange has even went away now. He's had enough of Gary and said, right, okay. So this is what it's like. So I'll be the Gary Barlow. You can be Mark Owens. And this is what this new and improved Banterflix podcast is like. So we've been there. We've done kind of Belfast on Screen. We've done Movies You Need to See. We're back as the original Banterflix Movie Review Podcast because I can't think of another name.
I could beat up Mark Owens. Like, not to be violent, but I think he's about 5'1" and I'm about 5'5". I could step on him.
But what if he's just one of these ones, he does a really good, a really mean uppercut and just takes you out?
Oh, he's wily.
You'd be like that guy that got beat up by Mark Owens.
I'd take him. That Shine's a good song.
Yeah, Shine is a proper tune. You know, what can I say? Mark was always my... Did you have a favourite member of Take That?
Robbie, I guess.
Oh, Robbie?
I don't know. He has that mysteriousness about him and all the drugs and aliens. I can dig it.
All right. Adam, nobody's perfect. Mark was always my favourite because he was ickle, as you've alluded to earlier on. But look, people aren't here to hear us talk about Take That. Other bands in the 90s and noughties existed. I was at an 80s event yesterday at Ward Park in Bangor. It was really weird because all the musicians kept saying, "Hello, Belfast!" And there was that one person going, "It's Bangor." But like Belinda Carlisle was there. Adam Ant headlined. Apparently it was terrible. I only really know one Adam Ant song. But Toya Wilcox was there and she was great. She did a cover of Billy Idol's Rebel Yell, and I thought it was fab. And Chesney Hawkes was there and had the decency to play his one song and then go. Well, he played a few other covers, but he did his one song. Everyone loves Chesney Hawkes. You're looking at me. I'm hoping you know those artists I've just mentioned.
Chesney Hawkes, the guy from the Daz commercials?
Yeah.
Yeah, and his famous song is...
His famous song is... I am the one and only...
From Karate Kid? No.
No, he was never that cool.
What film was that from?
Oh, I don't know. Just it should have been in every film. Every film ever would be improved by Chesney Hawkes's The One and Only.
Email in.
Yeah, email in. So that's two things. Well, we've already figured out the Take That stuff. We've already figured that out. So just email in your favourite other bands from the 90s and the noughties. An individual band. Rank, actually, what I want you to do is rank each member of that band. Like, I'm just going to name a band off the top of my head. I think one of them was Dane Bowers. Another level?
They're 37th on my ranking list.
Oh, man. That's all right then.
Out of a million.
But you know what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to, no matter what the list is, it's going to have five in fifth place, no matter what.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
A1 at the top?
Yeah.
I mean, the steak sauce, not the band. It's just an excellent sauce.
I don't know. I don't think I know an A1 song.
A1 Sauce?
A1 Sauce? All right, sorry. Okay. Sorry, I was thinking, all right, okay. Anyway, right, we went down a rabbit hole and we went down a tangent. Okay, so we're back. We're in a studio. You can already tell there's a bit of a difference. Gone are the days of the lag of Zoom. Gone are the days of when you're trying to edit a podcast with Zoom and all you kind of hear, someone tells a really funny joke, but all you hear is... So... we're here physically. I'm really excited about it. I've been at work all day and it's probably affected my work because I've been thinking about this. I've been thinking about you all day, Adam. All day.
I had a chippy earlier. It's my day.
I'm disgusted that I wasn't in your thoughts all day. But anyway, right, let's move on and let's get stuck into this week's show and we'll start off with a bit of movie news.
Would you not want him to have to do the one finger to see if he was bluffing, like?
No, we wouldn't.
Because worse comes to worse, he can still play the fiddle with four fingers, I bet ya.
Going back to your own gang now, Paddy.
And talking to me, are you?
Why aren't you talking to Paddy no more?
That wouldn't be a sin, though, would it, Father?
No, but it's not very nice either, is it?
Do you know who we remember for how nice they was in the 17th century?
Who?
Absolutely no one. Yeah, we all remember the music at the time. Everyone to a man knows Mozart's name.
I don't, so there goes that theory.
So that's a little snippet from the trailer of The Banshees of Inisherin. That's what I'm going with. I'm going to be brave and bold and say that. But this is Martin McDonagh is going to be doing this. It's going to be playing at Venice. I think it's also playing at Toronto Film Festival. He's re-teaming with his In Bruges stars Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. We also have the rather fabulous Barry Keoghan who's on this. I know you've seen the trailer. I've literally just looked at it because, listeners, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I forgot that we were going to talk about this film and I literally had to just watch the trailer just seconds before we started to record. But Adam, are you excited about this? Are you a fan of the McDonaghs?
I am. I'm also excited for The Forgiven, which is coming out, his brother's film. But this looks great. I love the chemistry with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. In Bruges is one of the funniest movies in the last 20 years. I don't know if it's because of the Irishness of it all, that it gets away with a lot more than it should. Colin Farrell telling a load of fat tourists that they're elephants and they can't go up a tower is hilarious. It looks really good. I don't really know what era it's set in. Is it a modern day thing?
I think it's modern. It looks modern-ish. I should know. I just saw the trailer, literally, 2 minute trailer 2 minutes ago. It looks modern-ish, but it's Ireland, so that could be anywhere between like the 1960s to 2022.
Yeah. The guard, was that Martin?
That was the other one.
That was the other one. What was the other one that Martin did?
So he did Three Billboards, and he did In Bruges, and then the other one did, is it Seven Psychopaths?
Yes.
And The Guard, and...
what was that weird cop one with...
Beverly Hills Cop.
I'm thinking of another 48 Hours. It had Michael Peña and Skarsgård, Alexander Skarsgård.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I watched it in the cinema. It has went over my head. I just knew there's a song in it I quite like, and I played it on my iPod for quite some time. My iPod, how 90s am I? My iPhone for a while, but the name of the song has went out of my head. So, listeners, if you want to email in the name of that film, I'm not going to allow myself to go into iTunes and do it. Not iTunes. I'm not going to allow myself to go into IMDb and check it. So email in the name of that film, please.
Email in the name of the song that Jim liked.
Yeah, email in that as well, please. Just to keep me fully in the loop. But I'm excited about this because I know there was... I mean, I'm trying to think. There was used to be Gavin. We haven't spoke to Gavin for quite some time. I know he wasn't a huge fan of the McDonaghs as filmmakers. I always have been. I mean... I'm trying to think, what was the other one with...
Cavalry?
Is it Cavalry? Because the main thing in this, right, you've mentioned Colin Farrell, who I would probably watch in anything, and Brendan Gleeson, I would happily let him come in and read me the phone book, because I'm sure he would give me loads of gravitas, and there's a possibility he might bring all his kids, yeah, and they could do stuff as well. And you've also got Barry Keoghan, who I just love as a performer, still to this day the greatest interview I've ever got to do. Not that I big myself up anything, but I was down at Dublin, he rocked, everybody was in suits and he just rocked up in like a Kappa tracksuit, and I was like, Barry, you're a legend, my friend. And I told him that to his face and he looked at me as if to go, who are you, mate? I was like, all right. But yes, I'm excited about this. It's the McDonald's. But I know, I think I asked you this question and cut across you. I can do this easier now in Zoom. Apologies, listeners. But are you a fan generally of the filmmakers?
Oh, yeah, 100%. They have a sort of, I don't know, like a style to them, to their own, that is Irish, but can appeal to international audiences. But it's such that dark-humoured, we can kind of get away with saying ridiculous stuff, but it's true to the characters.
Yeah, you can talk about dwarfs and midgets.
Yeah, and like race wars, that's going to happen. And those are scenes that shouldn't really work in a movie, but you've got the charm of people like Brendan Gleeson in Bruges, that those scenes become memorable scenes in cinema. And the scene, of course, with Voldemort, his name is blanking me.
Ralph Fiennes. Or Ralph to his friends.
Going mental and then screaming because it's Christmas Day.
Yeah.
I don't want to say the C word on the podcast, but I can.
You can, yeah.
He says that he has to go away because he has to sort out some cons.
I really wish I had the editing skills to put a little bleep in there, but I don't. And it's not so much probably that I don't have the skills. I just can't be arsed. So apologies, listeners, if you heard the word cunt. But yeah, I just couldn't be bothered editing it out. I'm excited, but I love what both of them do because they both come from theatre backgrounds and they use Irish dark humour as a disarming way to kind of get in and chink through the kind of get underneath the skins of their characters and then allow us along the journey. Like in Three Billboards, I mean, you don't necessarily like the characters. Like, I think, isn't it Woody Harrelson? Isn't that, he's like a racist cop in that?
And Sam Rockwell,
that's the one. Sorry, apologies. And Woody Harrelson is in it.
Isn't it?
He doesn't get to see it to the end of the film. Spoilers. But Sam Rockwell, you don't necessarily like those characters, but you can come on board and have a certain sense of maybe not sympathy for them, but empathy for them in a sense. So I'm looking forward to this. But look, we've mentioned Barry Keoghan. That's one bit of movie news. And as I say, that's going to be coming to Venice. It's coming to Toronto. It also will be coming to cinemas at some point. But we have the confirmation that we're going to have a Joker sequel, and that is Joker Folie à Deux, which my French teacher would be really proud of the way I said that. La Bibliothèque. But Todd Phillips is going to be directing. It's going to be out in 2024. Isn't that right?
Yes. November?
November 2024. Really precise. I think it's almost, because it was 2019, first one. So that's going to be nearly, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
If my old Maz teacher would be proud, I can take away 2024 from 2019.
Bibliothèque.
Yeah, La Bibliothèque. But I think this is going to be an interesting conversation, but you excited at all? Lady Gaga's going to be there. We don't know who has. I think everybody's just assuming that it's going to be Harley Quinn. We have Joaquin Phoenix rocking back up as Arthur Fleck. You excited?
Do you know my opinions on the Joker movie?
I don't know your opinions on the Joker movie, but I did see on Twitter a little kind of throw it back in the sea.
I notoriously do not like the Joker movie.
Okay.
I seen it 3 times in cinema to make sure that I was right on my opinion.
Did you hear it from the get-go? Because it's going to be interesting to my experience of it. Did you hear it from the get-go and you were like, did I? And went back to, like, I imagine those 3 times you just literally went back in like a little conveyor belt. You're like, I really didn't like that. I'm going to go back in and see it again. It's like, all right, Joaquin, I really didn't like you. And the third time,
I seen it in Las Vegas, Humblebrook, and whenever I seen it on opening day, there was policemen with like assault rifles and body
armor. Yeah, because there was moral panic about the film.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I seen it by myself, and you know, an Irish guy in an American city in a theater by himself on opening day, Joker
with like 5 guns because one just isn't enough.
carrying a hot dog in, being like, I swear, I'm just going to eat it. I'm not going to throw it. There was points where I was watching the movie being like, I just want to walk out of this because it's really just derivative of King of Comedy, Scorsese's King of Comedy, and Taxi Driver.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a point that people have made multiple times, but it is true. King of Comedy is just a better movie than this.
Shock horror.
I know. And I don't mind films riffing off other films. But with this, it's so up its own hole that they kind of want to be like, it's about mental illness. You've heard people talking, it's about mental illness. When it's really not. It's about fuck all. You watch it. Oh, he's mad. Oh, that's crazy. Second time I seen it, got back home to Belfast, seen it with a girlfriend. She said it was shit as well. I was like, right, this is a second experience for someone else.
Was that when you knew she was the one?
I put my ring on her finger and said, will you be my Harley Quinn? So then I seen it a third time by myself to be like, right, third time's a charm. I'll see it, empty cinema, let's see how it is. Still shit. Bought it on Blu-ray.
Fuck's sake. I mean, you're the reason why there's a fucking sequel happening.
I'm a psychopath, Jim. I can't help it. Yeah, I just want to dance down a pair of stairs.
Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Well, that's a good joker. So this, ever since it was announced, I've been like, just throw it in the sea. And then whenever they announced that it's going to be partly musical, I was like, I'll dig it. I'm in. You've sold a ticket. Because all of the wee incels that are like, I'm just like the Joker. He doesn't give a care about the world. Now they have to sit through Lady Gaga musical, and that pleases me. I don't really want to watch it, but I will watch it.
So you're going to go see it three times and buy it in Blu-ray, just to be sure?
Well, Steelbox, of course.
So here's the thing. It's interesting you say that because, right, I know earlier on I was bigging myself up and going, here, I once interviewed Barry Keoghan, and I told him he looked great in his Kappa tracksuit, and he just looked at me as if to go, huh? I got to see Joker at its world premiere at Venice. It was at a time pre-pandemic where foolishly I kind of thought Pantherflex might go somewhere. It's like we've got accepted to Venice. It was exciting. And anytime I think of Joker, I always think of like there was like this Italian guy, obviously because it was Venice. And anytime he mentioned the film in the introduction, he was like speaking Joker.
I didn't do
Italian at GCSE or anything like that. But the only way, like, He said some certain words. It's like that at Century when you watch like Irish channels. Mm-hmm. And sorry to offend all our Irish listeners, but it's like talk to take to talk to take to take to iPad, talk to take to computer. And it's like there's certain words you just don't know. And it's like Italian. It's like I don't really know what he's saying, but all he said was like the way he said Joker just stuck with me. And when I watched it, because it's on my Facebook history, I can't delete it if I want, but I choose to certain things I stand by. I watched it at the time and I enjoyed it because I kind of like the whole way it finishes up with sending the clowns, and there's certain things I enjoyed about it. I enjoyed the fact that there was certain ambiguity about certain things, the fact that they treated it that, like, this guy Arthur, he might not even be the Joker in the grand scheme of things. He's just someone who has kind of, without going into spoilers and X, Y, Z, but he kind of just, the final.
It's been out for years. Spoil it.
I know. Fuck it. It was a sled as well. I don't know. He was dead. Bruce Willis was dead. Bruce Willis wore a wig. If it's that guy wearing the wig is Bruce Willis, I think that's the Always Sunny reference. But I liked it when I seen it at Venice. I then came back to Belfast. I didn't have to take three times like you. I came back and Movie House did a press screening off it. I went to see it and it's that sense, and it'll be interesting to see if you've ever had this, because you clearly didn't have it with the first viewing of The Joker. It's like, I'm really wrong. I really don't like this. And I know at the time when I watched it, I sat there going, this is just king of comedy. I mean, you can't have Robert De Niro rocking up in your film being a chat show host and not go, hang on, you're evoking kind of king of comedy here, one of my favourite Scorsese movies. And yes, there's loads of Taxi Driver references in there. I accepted that the first time round. I still enjoyed it, but second time round watching it, it is kind of going, oh no. Oh no. What film did I watch first time round? Is this like another cut? It's like, it feels really long and baggy. And like the sequence that is the point where I kind of go, it really doesn't work, is the use of the Gary Glitter track on dancing on the stairwell outside. And I remember watching it, and my wife was there at the time. Well, she was probably my fiance at that point, and she fell asleep, and that's when I knew she was a keeper. But yeah, and it's weird. The more distance I take from Joker, the more I dislike it. I mean, I will say this. I think Joaquin Phoenix gives a good performance.
Yeah.
I still prefer Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
And there's, I know you're kind of saying it's worth, I mean, there is interesting aspects of that first Joker movie where it is kind of showcasing about how this type of character, this narcissistic character, we think that he arrives fully formed, but it's a sense that society and society looking the other way has kind of helped forge and create that character. I know you're saying that's all bullshit, but I think there is interest in things, but it's all done at kind of face value.
Yeah.
There's never any kind of sense, there's no attempt to try and explore that. I don't know why, it's not on a visual medium, but Adam can verify, I'm doing this with my hand, like a little kind of swooping hand gesture. But I'm intrigued by this sequel, because it looks and sounds like Todd Phillips has been given carte blanche to do whatever he wants. I don't particularly like Todd Phillips as a filmmaker. I don't like the Hangover movies. I never did, and it's not like the Joker movies. It wasn't like you with the three viewings. The first time I watched the Hangover film, I kind of said, what a pile of chauvinist shite. And at the time I said it, I think I watched, there was I Love You Man, and there was a Hangover out around the same time. And I Love You Man isn't perfect by any means. I mean, it still has its kind of flaws now when you look at through 2022's eyes, but such a film with much more heart and soul than that pile of shite. But anyway,
Can I just say that you've said all this while wearing a Joker t-shirt?
Yeah, I was going to say all this, yes, because I do have my Joker t-shirt on, because I'm a hypocrite. I'm a hypocrite. It's my get out of jail card. It's like the old Jack D thing. The old Jack D joke. He used to say, like, oh, why can you do this, complain about XYZ, but also take their money? I'm a hypocrite. I do have a Joker t-shirt on. I was going to make a point of this. I actually forgot I'd wanted a Joker t-shirt on.
Specifically from the Joker movie.
From the Joker movie. And it wasn't at all because it was on sale at Last Exit to Nowhere. And that's when I kind of go, because anybody who works with me at Q Radio or knows me will know I always have to have a movie t-shirt on, because that's just how I present myself. It's like, I like movies. Here, that's why I wear a t-shirt. Sometimes I might even throw the jacket and go, have you even got a badge, mate? That's how much I love movies. That's my film critic credentials. Movie t-shirt and a badge. And this might have been on sale.
I can accept it. I have Joker on Blu-ray on sale three times. I can't say anything.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck you, Adam. But I might end up loving it. I'm intrigued about Lady Gaga's casting, because I have really warmed to her in recent years. And I mean, I do think, as much as I didn't like House of Gucci, I think it was a flawed film, I loved her performance. And I do think she deserved, not to win, but I think she deserved a nomination for a performance last year at the Academy Awards. I mean, is that at all intriguing? Even if it is potentially with the role of Harley Quinn, just to see somebody else doing that, because we haven't really seen her, like, in real life, other than Margot Robbie playing that character.
I think it's a sign of, you know, if Joker 1 is King of Comedy, Joker 2 is New York, New York.
Hmm.
And the fact that Lady Gaga came out with Eliza Minnelli on the Oscar stage last year as, you know, a passing of the baton of this is this generation's Eliza Minnelli. Maybe that's just Todd Phillips sitting in the audience being like, oh, I've got a smart idea. Let's do Starsky. I mean, let's do Joker 2.
That moment you talk about, because that night, or that morning, I suppose, for here, of course, is the famous Will Smith slapgate. Of course, Will has reached out to Chris Rock and apologised, and Chris Rock quite rightfully has said, fuck all. But I had got up because my lovely wife was going to a... But she had to go for surgery at Ballykelly, so I had to get stupidly early that morning, and I was kind of like listening in, and my heart did a little break a bit. I think that's part of the reason why I've started to love Lady Gaga, because for all the kind of madness that we think of all her stuff, she does actually seem kind of quite genuine.
Yeah.
If I can say it, because the fact is, like, wasn't it like Liza Minnelli, and she was quite frail, and she kind of was like, she didn't say it to the cameras. Mm-hmm. She was like, I got you.
Yeah.
The way I said to you before you came in here, it was like, don't worry, Adam, I got you. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, hi, Lady Gaga. She's a good old spud. So... I'm sure she'd love it. It's like if I said to Barry Keoghan, it's like, you're pretty dude. If I said to Lady Gaga, if you ever get to interview her, you're a good spud, I think. And she'll look at me and kind of go, what?
I've got you,
Jim. So are you intrigued at all about her casting?
No.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
That settles that. All right, fuck you.
I think it'll be fun. And, you know, I've enjoyed her and everything she's been in so far. I don't know. I think it depends what they do with it. It depends Like, is it going to be dead serious again? Is it going to be, because it's meant to be set in Arkham Asylum, is it going to be another movie talking about people being mental? There's the whole Joker, Harley Quinn, domestic abuse stuff. You know, how are they going to be able to handle it? I don't think a man like Todd Phillips can, because he's a shit director. And, you know, anything he's tried to handle in the past, whether it be friendship, you know, gay relationships, colored people, it's always been...
comedy.
Simple shot composures.
Being working as a director.
Just anything at all.
Opening the door.
Have you ever seen the interview with... It's like a round table, and he's doing it with, like, Greta Gerwig and Scorsese. And
no.
I can't remember. It's like Vanity Fair, director's round table. And he's so, like, so out of his depth on that table. People are just saying things, and he's like, well, whatever I was doing, Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, it's all right. Maybe that makes me respect him more.
Fuck him.
All right, then don't hold back. Okay. So that's enough of that. I think we're kind of undecided about Joker 2. So let's move on. And of course, Joker is a big Comic Con. A lot of people like to dress up as Joker. You go to Comic Con, there's like 7 Jokers. One of them's lying. So one of the big things that's returned, and I think it happened last year as well, but this has been the big kind of post-pandemic event in Dublin, the Comic Con. The Dublin Comic Con is probably without a doubt the biggest on in Ireland. So our very own Joanne Alexander, aka Hedgecart, has been there over the 2 days, and here's a little report that Joanne did for us.
Hello, my name's Joanne, aka Hedgecart, and I'm here this weekend on behalf of Banderflix. And I thought we would talk about DCC Summer Edition. I was with the Eye of Harmony, which are an amazing Doctor Who group. And I have some of the gang here with me, and we're going to have a wee chat about the convention. But I'm going to kick off, first of all, with Amanda, and I'd like you to properly introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Amanda Alloway, and I'm with the Eye of Harmony Doctor Who cosplay group. And we were here at DCC in March, and we were lucky enough to be invited back for the summer. So obviously everything went well, and it's been a real pleasure this weekend just to be able to share some of our Whovian love with the rest of the cosplayers here in Dublin.
Yeah, I think it actually was quite successful for us this weekend too.
Definitely. I mean, I think we've had really, really good feedback, and even people who maybe aren't Doctor Who fans per se certainly seem to be engaged by the display, engaged by the costumes, and actually engaged just by some of the brilliant team that I had around me this weekend to help us.
Oh, I like the way you call us brilliant team. And that's actually a very nice segue. I'm going to come on to some of the brilliant team here. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Lisa Todd, and I'm part of the Eye of Harmony. I cosplay as Sergeant Smith and occasionally Soufflé Girl. And this is our second time coming to the DCC. This time it was much, much busier than the Spring Edition. And you can notice each generation, there's always someone in a group. If there's a family come across us, there's someone recognises something or part of a costume or a Dalek or a Cyberman. And so you're getting such a wide variety of ages, and just you spot the odd TARDIS school bag or backpack or wee badge, and you're just like, come over here and talk to us, and everybody's just so enthusiastic about it.
Albie, this is your first time with us. Yeah. Dear help you. Yep, you were a really willing victim this weekend.
Yeah. Well, I was thrown into it, really.
You were? You don't think you really had any option?
Yeah, it was very much, do you want to go to the table? And then it was, you're the only one on the table. But I had quite a cool experience, because the first day I was on the table just sort of as crew only, and just sort of engaging with fans a little bit. And then today, for the second day, I was in costume, so that was a completely different experience, because people were asking for photographs, but you still got to talk to them about the show and what they liked. And obviously you had the odd kid coming over just for jelly babies, and then you got to scare them a bit, which is fun.
That's what we do. If you get a good scream, that means it's been a good weekend. So Albie, because this is your first time at DCC, you're actually the perfect person to ask. What was your highlight this weekend? Did you see anything in particular that you just loved?
Well, I really loved a lot of the comic book cosplays, particularly sort of the Nightwings and Red Hoods and some of the X-Men. But I found that I got really excited when I saw Doctor Who cosplays, because it was like, there's more of us.
You wanted to shout nerd at them?
Yeah.
No, it's been very, very, very good weekend. An extremely warm weekend. I think all of us have suffered badly from the heat. Mm-hmm. Amanda, what's been your highlight? That's non-Doctor Who.
Well, I haven't really had much time really to think about it because I've been really covering three tables.
Yeah, you've been pretty
busy. Doing Doctor Who and also our Heroes and Legends table, which has been a bit of Harry Potter and some other characters as well, plus the Star Wars stuff with the Armel Garrison. So I haven't really had a great deal of time to really look at everything that's been going on. But I think the one thing I would say is that for someone of maybe more mature years, it's actually really nice to see the spread of people actually coming here and cosplaying. It's not just about, you know, kids coming in costumes or anything like that. So I suppose actually, just being the old steampunk that I am, I was delighted to see a steampunk couple here in costume. There's not very many of us here in Ireland, north or south, so I felt like that was part of my steampunk community here represented, so that was really good to see.
Because steampunk's really cool and there should be so much more of it.
Absolutely.
I don't understand why there isn't.
Well, I think it's growing and we're just a little bit behind the time. So I look forward to seeing more of that in future.
And there is a little bit of steampunk in everything, especially in the Whovian world.
Yeah,
you know, there's
absolutely
always some sort of little reference to it. And it's so nice to see people just with little elements of it in their costumes. Mm-hmm. But going on from that, I have to say there was an American couple came to the table. And one of my highlights was speaking to them, and they've moved to Ireland. They're studying here, and they were telling me they got married, and he was dressed as the 10th Doctor at the wedding, and it just made me go a wee bit gooey inside and remember that I was a real girl. And it was just lovely talking to them and them asking all about us and what we do, and that they're going to come back in springtime and hopefully see us again. And you know, and it is again seeing the same faces coming back over and starting up. It's like even with us coming back together as a club and a team, and we maybe haven't seen each other for 6 years or a month, mm-hmm. and it's just the community that's involved in this cosplay world. It's amazing, and everybody, we're all in this together. I'm going to High School Musical, like, we're all in this together. And I won't sing, actually. But yeah, it is amazing to see the same people year after year and how their costumes have developed and the confidence that they've got. And like I say, there's from teenies to elderly walking around here, and it just gives you a bit of confidence out of your normal life to be able to say, I'm around my people.
Yeah.
And it just makes you feel like you belong. It's really, yes.
Yeah, and going on from that, sort of similar to Amanda and steampunk, I'm very into goth subculture, and there was a woman dressed as Morticia, and she came over and she was a real Doctor Who fan. So that really made me feel very happy. Like, oh, goths like Doctor Who too.
Of course they do.
Oh, of course they do.
I was just about everything this weekend. I was Queen Hippolyta, Catwoman, Black Canary. What else was I?
Missy.
And the Fourth Doctor, of course. There has to be Doctor Who in there. And as a cosplayer this weekend, it was possibly one of the warmest. I mean, we've had an awful lot of heat waves recently, so being in costume has just been so, so moist. Because I have to use that word, there's no other way to say it. One of my highlights, apart from obviously the Doctor Who stuff as well, has been the other costumers. We've seen a Spider-Man today, who we really appreciated for completely different reasons. I have photographs if anybody wants them. Yes, very good. But there was a giant gremlin down in the foyer. Which was just quite horrific. It was a bit like the stuff of nightmares, to be perfectly honest. But the range of costumes, at one point I actually thought there maybe wasn't as many people in cosplay, but it turned out they all just seemed to come more today. Mm-hmm. And whether it was because they thought it might be a wee bit quieter, because yesterday walking through the place was absolutely hectic. And all credit actually to the DCC team for what they've done. They put on one hell of a show again this weekend. And I think it's great that we've got the invite to come and to do this and actually to show us, because as you can see, this has been mostly sort of like a recap from a Whovian point of view, but for us it's been so good, you know, to get that invite back again. So I can highly recommend Dublin Comic Con. It's great that it's within Ireland for a start, because we don't really have an awful lot. I know there's smaller events, which I definitely recommend everybody go and see, but this is really the big one, and it just keeps getting better and better every year. Mm-hmm. It really does, and the level of guests that they have too is fantastic. I mean, we all seen Peter Weller walking about as well. There's Queen Maeve from The Boys, who apparently, talking to one of our guys in the Emerald Garrison, she only lives down the road.
That's right. Yeah, she's a dub.
Yeah. So that's the, I mean, there are all sorts of Irish connections with the fans and with the actors as well. So that's really nice to see. For them, they probably think, great, I've got a free flight over to back to my home country again, and where people will actually appreciate the fact that I'm from here. So no, it was very, very good. It must have been so hard for the staff though, working in the heat. Yeah. I really, my heart goes out to them. And because looking at them, they were just punctured and they had to deal with queues and people standing about all over the place. But, you know, inappropriately standing about and all over the place, getting in people's way. But no, very, very good. So just want to say thanks very much to DCC. But have you any other highlights that you want to talk about?
I think it's just been such a brilliant weekend. And, you know, just to sort of echo what Lisa said, the fact that we've been able to, all the clubs really coming together and supporting each other. And the fact that DCC, as you say, I mean, we do get an invite, you know, we get an option to come here, and they're very keen to actually sort of encourage fan groups and that to participate in the Comic Con. And I think that's very welcome from our point of view.
Yeah. And actually, that's a good thing then to end on. All the clubs that were here this weekend, including Medieval Ireland, which put on an amazing display, beating the hell out of each other actually outside. You've had the Emerald Garrison, which is us, the Eye of Harmony. You've had Heroes and Legends. You've had the 501st, the Rebel Legion. And it's all that interconnection, yes. And then the various cosplay groups as well, the smaller cosplay groups and individuals. So it's been very good. And it's nice to see that level of support as well. Yes. Oh, and of course, how could I forget? USS Cucullin, who fed us and looked after us. And if you didn't get a photograph on their bridge, well, you'll get it again in March when it's back. So thanks very much, folks, for listening to us talking about DCC for this weekend. And come next March, because you're missing a really good show.
So that's Joanne talking about Dublin Comic Con. If you were down, let us know what you thought of it. Had you fun? What were some of the guests? When the high-profile guests, you know, Peter Weller was there, and someone I'd like to see. I just don't really want to pay to see him.
Dead or Alive, you're coming with me.
Yeah, Dead or Alive, Jim, you're coming. It's like, all right, there's your £25. All right, there, I've got your autograph. But Joanne is, some, as I said, mentioned kind of before, she's a cosplayer. She has cosplayed as Batgirl, and I don't think she's going to be cosplaying as the new Batgirl, because this film has now been scrapped. So something like $70 million it's cost Warner Brothers. I think it was $90 million. I think $70 million. I don't work kind of, sorry, maths teacher, I don't really do good with the exchange rates, but really bibliothèque. But yeah, around £74 million. So shot in Glasgow, large. It was going to be Michael Keaton's return. Leslie Grace was going to be back. J.K. Simmons was going to be there. Brendan Fraser, remember him? He was going to be Firefly. But it's been scrapped. I think it was going to be or whatever it is that service is called. Max. Is
HBO,
it HBO Max? HBO Max exclusive. There's various, as we're recording tonight and Sunday, there's various reasons kind of that have been given. It just didn't poll well with audiences. I think it's one criticism is that it looked like a TV movie, didn't look cinematic. I don't know, but what do you think? I mean, your thoughts on the film being cancelled? I mean, I'd love to be able to write off $70 million. You know, if my bank account's listening, if my bank manager's like, I have a bank manager. Fuck off, Jim. It's like, if I had a bank manager, but if I could write off something like $74 million. But I mean, this is not just it, because I think Supergirl's been scrapped as well. The Scoob sequel. The Scoob sequel's been cancelled. I did try to watch that on Amazon Prime and got like 10 minutes into it, and never have I yearned so much for the kind of the 90s live action one, which was a lot of fun compared to that. But yeah, so I think this is the new owners, Discovery, that have bought Warner Brothers recently, are kind of coming in, cleaning house, making a lot of changes. I think I read somewhere recently, well, like, for fuck's sake, like, what have Warner Brothers really been doing? But I suppose when you think about it, they haven't done that they want to do a similar approach to what Marvel have done. Only the thought of that at the start. It's like, yeah, Marvel seem to have a good idea what they're doing. Let's just try this shit. Let's just throw this to the wall and hope it sticks. I come back to the point, I think, as much as I love the Dark Knight movies, the success of those are probably a main reason why Warner Brothers, for a little while, were so far behind with Marvel and what they were doing. But I don't know. I mean, I think this can only potentially be a good thing that someone's going to try and take the reins at Warner Brothers and kind of try and do something with DC and do something with the quality of DC. I just kind of hope that we see another Superman film coming at some point. But your thoughts?
I don't really know. It's one of those things where they're saying they want to clean house and get everything back on track, but it's like, this is something that they said 10 years ago. You know, like, it wasn't as if Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman and Wonder Woman, these movies, they were the Marvel world building in universe to the Justice League.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what happened with the Justice League and Zack Snyder, which then we got Zack Snyder's movie eventually on HBO Max.
Fuck.
The 4-hour epic.
Did you like it?
I liked that there was Nick Cave songs in it. I love Nick Cave. So I was kind of, anytime it dipped, there would be like a Nick Cave song, and I'd be like, you know what, Zack Snyder's art. But these guys saying, first off, that it was a tax write-off, then saying that the quality wasn't as good. It's bad management. It is the public knowing too much about industry inside stuff. Having like 8-year-old kids, like I work in a cinema, having 8-year-old kids coming out of Super Pets, talking about the next big DC movies, and an 8-year-old kid being like, it was a tax write-off. And you're like, kids shouldn't need to know this.
I need that 8-year-old kid as my bank manager.
I don't really care about the Batgirl movie. It was going to HBO Max anyway. Then they said it was such good quality, it's coming to theatre. And then they said that it's
shit
TV quality. It's like, what fucking, make up your mind.
But marketing people lie. I mean, we know this. I mean, people who cut trailers lie. They'll lie. They'll sell their soul to get you to buy a cinema ticket. And then you go, well, that's not what the fucking trailer sold me. This was shit.
Yeah. It's tested at the same numbers that Shazam 2 is in its preview screenings.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what that says about Shazam 2, that it's still coming out. Probably going to be a load of Shazam poo.
See what you did there.
That's poopy. Because did you like the first Shazam?
I like parts of it.
Yeah.
It's David Sandberg, yeah. The guy that did Lights Out.
Yeah.
I think my one memory of Shazam, I mean, I liked it because it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it kind of moved into horror elements, like pseudo-horror, I was like, this is tough for like a 12A. I mean, this is top-end 12A. I remember at the time going, and that's probably not what a filmmaker wants you to come away from. It's like going, maybe it's me with my supposed film critic head on going, it's like, this is really pushing a 12A.
Mm.
And, I mean, I've seen it. I probably can't remember that much about it other than the fact that the guy from the OC shows up in the end as the adult variant of one of the kids that wears the kind of is Team Shazam.
Adam Brody? Something
like that? Yeah, I think so. Nobody knows. He's just that kid from the OC. But I enjoyed it at the time. I didn't necessarily love it. Didn't necessarily hate it. Like so many of the DC content other than the shite show that was pretty much anything Man of Steel was bearable. Batman vs. Superman was a mess of a film. I will give Zack Snyder, I'll give him his credit. The director's cut of that film did improvement, but it's like you shouldn't need 3 hours to tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, then you shouldn't need 4 hours to try and tell your story with Justice League. And his approach to superheroes and this the burden of gods is just really boring. And the fact that Superman's burdened with being Superman. Superman should just be fun. Like, that's why I think everybody loves the Christopher Reeves era. Because they're bright, they're colourful. Okay, the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2, best Superman movie, does go into darker areas. Yeah, I know there's like evil Superman in Superman 3.
He's got a beard.
Yeah, he's got a beard and his blue uniform's a little bit darker and he likes a drink. And I don't know, I could be wrong on this, it's been a while. Doesn't Superman in Superman 3, the evil Superman, just to clarify, I think doesn't he get a bit rapey? I'm not trying to be flippant about it, but
Clara Lois?
No, it's the other one, because I think that's the one when Margot Kidder had a bit of a breakdown.
Uh-huh.
And she literally rocks up the start of Superman 3. It's like, hi everybody, I'm away on holiday, goodbye. And there's like a new, Lana Lane, I think, comes back as the love interest. Okay. And I think I need to rewatch it because I have a soft spot for Superman 3. Like I have a soft spot for Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Because it's so, so bad. And it's so terrible. But yeah, I love it. And there's a scene in Superman 4 for no apparent reason where Lois Lane flies on her own. And nobody ever batters an eyelid.
I've never seen it.
You should. Adam, if you go from this, if you take anything from this podcast recording, you should watch Superman 4, A Quest for Peace. I kind of like the Superman, Brandon Roth mm-hmm. version of Superman. I like what they tried to do, but I think it was too stuck in trying to because it was set within the timeline of the Christopher Reeve's tenure. I think it should have tried to do its own thing. I love Henry Cavill. I mean, I genuinely love Henry Cavill. It just happens he's in a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And it's weird because when you see him being interviewed, he's charismatic, he's funny, he's witty. But when you see him acting, not in everything. Like, I love him in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, he's so good, man.
And you're like, you could be James Bond.
Yeah.
And he nearly was James Bond. But when you watch him in Superman, it's like, there is the line. I think it's in the original version, in the, oh, what do you call him? From Avengers. Josh Whedon, cut of Justice League. It's like, when he comes back from the dead, it's like, you smell different. It's like, did I smell bad before? All right, go on, calm down, Henry. Keep it. Keep the flirtation down. I don't know. I've never liked what they've done. It's interesting though, because you've got Aquaman 2 coming out, and we've got Batfleck back. Nobody really wants to talk about the Flash movie, because what's going on with Ezra Miller? They seem to have kind of went off on a bit of a tangent right now. They seem to be going on a bit of an episode. Man, you know, let's not go down that and be flipping about that. I don't know what's going on there, but a lot of people are not happy with Ezra Miller at Warner Brothers. We don't know what's going to happen with that film. It sounds a bit like what Kenneth Branagh, Sir Kenneth, had to do with the Death in the Nile, and just kind of hope and pray that the worst of it goes so they can release it with Arnie Hammer. Didn't go away. That didn't help. But I don't know. I mean, I think you asked me about Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we ended up somehow talking about Henry Cavill and did I smell bad before?
Just to talk about The Flash for a second, I have a theory that Warner Brothers doesn't want to say anything bad about The Flash movie or deny that they're ever going to release The Flash movie, because they're getting their lawyers in order to sue Ezra Miller, and then it'll come up in court, because obviously they have to release a Flash movie, but if they're going to sue him, it's going to come up in court. Well, you said in such and such interview, we're never going to release a Flash interview. Therefore, cuts off the case they have of Ezra. I think the Flash movie's never going to come out. Feel free to take this clip and put it on top of the Flash trailer when it comes out next
The Flash June. Movie poster.
Put it at the top. This movie was never going to come
out. This movie will never come out.
But yeah, I just don't... I can't see a future where that movie comes out.
I feel really sad now for Michael Keaton.
Because
he's going to be Batgirl, and the Flash was going to bring him back. It's like, everybody loves Michael Keaton, but everybody wants him back as Batman.
But also he got paid, and now he doesn't have to do anything. It's great. Take that money and make Beetlejuice 2, Michael. Do it.
Do you really want him to, though?
Make Jackie Brown 2.
Yes, there we go. Just stop Quentin going up his own hole and make Jackie Brown 2. Yes, I don't know. I think it's going to be one that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And look, I think we could talk about this quite a bit. I think with that, we shall move on from the movie news section of the show, and let's get into this week's big release, and that, of course, is Bullet Train. And before we share our thoughts on the film, let's play a clip.
Kid, come on!
I can't! My fat cock is stuck!
What? Leave it! Let's go! We gotta go!
No, I can't!
Right now, young lady!
No!
It's our last chance!
No, please come back!
Oh, kid, please!
I'm scared! I don't want to be alone! Please!
So that's a clip of Bullet Train. It's out in cinemas now. It's directed by David Leitch, I'm gonna say. It stars a pretty impressive ensemble cast. There's a couple of cameos in there. One I might give away in a little flippant kind of thing that you may or may not laugh at, Adam. I don't know. But we're not going to be spoilerific about it. But Brad Pitt's here. He plays Ladybug. It's a pretty simple, straightforward... Is it snatch and grab? Is that what they call it? He has to get a briefcase off a bullet train, off a bullet train, and that's his job done. He's stepping in for somebody else at the last minute, and he has to get the briefcase. But it all goes badly wrong. And as you've seen from the trailers, I know our very own Joe McElroy refuses to believe this film actually exists. He insists that it's like The Matrix. It doesn't actually exist. But it's got an audience score, I think, of 74%. Critics have been very divided over it. I think it's 54%, I'm reading here on the Rotten Tomatoes website. I'll hold back for now, but what do you think?
Shout out to Joe. We love Joe.
Do you, though?
100%. Joe is my number one boy. Let's go see Joker 2 together, Joe. I'll dress as Harley Quinn. I got you, Joe. Bullet Train, I went and seen in 4DX. Over in the Cineworld complex in the Odyssey. And I almost flew out of my seat. There's a bit towards the end of the movie when something happens to the train.
Yeah.
And I looked at my girlfriend and thought, oh shit, I'm going to fly into the front row. Because it was so ridiculously, like, the motion.
Yeah.
See, if you have, like, a heart problem or a neck problem, do not go see Bullet Train.
Okay.
If you have any respect for yourself, don't go see Bullet Train.
Okay.
Bullet Train, to me, is... I wrote a lot of books. It's a movie more interested in its characters' backstories than even a bottle of water gets a backstory. And
yeah.
The backstories that they show for the characters are way more interesting than anything that's happening in the forward-moving plot of Bullet Train. There's two characters in the movie played by Brian Tyree Henry and...
Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Tangerine and Lemon.
Yeah.
The movie should be about them. Every time they were on screen, I was like, this is hilarious. I love these two's chemistry together.
I love Thomas the Tank.
We're all looking for a Percy.
Yeah. Nobody wants to be a Diesel.
Absolutely not. And even though Brian Tyree Henry? Is that right?
Say it with confidence.
Brian Tyree Henry, that's your name, right? Even though he's not British, he's given a fun Cockney accent performance. And I really enjoyed it. At the start, I was like, this is super annoying. But then I really enjoyed it. Aaron Taylor Johnson looking sexy with that mustache.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt clearly just doesn't want to be there. He's just going with the motion of the train. Some fun cameos, but also... Did you see The Lost City that came out a few months ago?
No, I've been meaning to watch it.
That had a cameo from...
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt in it. Well, clearly...
Because there's a reverse cameo here, and it exists because of Lost City.
It definitely feels like a...
Spoiler, sorry. If you've seen Lost City.
It feels like there was a handshake agreement, just like in Deadpool 2 with Brad Pitt giving a cameo, and then that handshake agreement...
Well, you've
agreement.
Got David Leitch, because David Leitch, I think, wasn't he Brad Pitt's body double for stuntman, I think, for a long time, and that's kind of where that friendship exists, because Brad Pitt pops up, as you've kind of alluded to there, he pops up in Deadpool 2.
Yes.
So they have a history together, they have a friendship. I'm nearly certain it's either stuntman, I'm nearly certain he was a stuntman or something for Brad Pitt, because I think he featured, or was a body double for him in like some of the early Oceans movies. I'm not sure.
Did he also get to eat a lot of stuff like Brad Pitt did?
Possibly.
Brad Pitt eats wasabi peas in this, and I was like, classic Pitt.
See, I don't know if... Well, clearly he was there for the paycheck because he got paid to be in this film. I, like you, did love Aaron Taylor-Johnson in this, but then that's because Aaron Taylor-Johnson is in Kick-Ass. He is Kick-Ass, and I always love that man because he was Kick-Ass, and I love that film with every ounce of my body. This film did feel like that sense of, like, the Quentin Tarantino-esque... quirky characters, eccentric characters, throw them together into this kind of pressure cooker environment and see what happens. The backstories do get a little bit tenuous. It's a wee bit like Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like every so often, it's like, I forget what they're saying in the Spider-Verse.
Let's do this one more time.
Yeah, and they kind of go back and back. And then the point where I kind of went, oh, for fuck's sake, you've alluded to it already, there's a water bottle and the water bottle gets a history. And you kind of go to yourself, I think at that stage you can either go with it, or you can be like the person who was in the cinema with me, kind of quite loudly went, oh, for fuck's sake. And it's not a spoiler to say, like, when the credits are rolling, I don't think it's a post-credits thing, but the credits start to roll and then there's another little bit of the film going on, and I sort of stopped at the exit to watch it. And this same person, as she was storming out the cinema, haven't seen someone as angry at the cinema since Mother. She was like, well, that's 2 hours of my life. I'm not getting fucking back. And you're like, I don't work here. I don't work here. I'm just looking at the trailer. Like, I'm just looking at the film like you. I'm going to be honest and upfront. I had a ball with this film up until the last 20 minutes when it just was like, right, okay, you've done all the over-the-top stuff. You've done all the silliness. It's like, right, bring it home. Bring it on home in. I forget, where is it? The final stop of the train?
Oh, somewhere. Japan.
Somewhere in Japan, yeah. Email in if you know. It's like the big mountain in Japan.
The Chesley Hawk song and the mountain in Japan.
And your favourite bands, if you take anything from this podcast. But, once again, and it just, as you've alluded to with the 4DX, it just goes, right, it's like, let's just bring everything. It's been sitting like at like a 7 or an 8 through most of this film. Instead of like wrapping it all up, you go, right, let's just fucking ramp it all up to like 15 and 20. And you're like, it's too much. Mm. I enjoyed it for what it was. I thought the dialogue was snappy enough. Yeah, like you said too, I think it's all interesting. People's backstories and who they are rather than telling us, showing us what they do. I think the action sequences are well executed. I think it's a stylish film, but it's one of those films, it's like, we're cool.
Yeah.
We're cool. It's like, we've got cameos for cameo's sake, but I think the cameos are handled well. I think it's not to the point of like maybe where it was getting like an Austin Powers Gold Member, where it's like, right, here's just fucking Tom Cruise for no real reason. I think it's handled quite well. I mean, I quite liked, was it the White Devil or whatever it's called then? I kind of like the reveal of who that was. It's like, that's a perfect bit of casting. But I will say this, right, it probably is a spoiler. I apologise. I know the film's only out. But I was sitting there and I was scribbling down my notes, as you do when you're doing this. And I was watching the film. I was like, oh, I quite like the fact the film's possibly going to be a great one and done. So we don't have to see every other film in the universe. We don't have to watch stuff on Disney or whatever it is to be able to know what people's backstories is. And I say, oh, it's really good that we don't have Ryan Reynolds in a film. And literally, he may or may not appear. That's as much. It's like, he may or may not appear. It's only for a second. And I remember sitting there kind of going like, oh, I was like that person. I didn't mutter as loudly as that person did, and that woman did in the cinema with me. But I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Everything. Ryan Reynolds doesn't have to be in everything. I liked it. I enjoyed it for what it was. I think, as I say, it's well done action. It's stylish. But it's a film that thinks it's pretty cool. It's very 90s. It's kind of like that kind of like, remember like in the wake of like the success of Quentin Tarantino, those type of films emerged. Those style of films, like, right, we're going to do this and it's going to have interesting camera angles and character choices and he's going to have a weird accent. Why? Because he can. And a lot of those films were a mess. I think this film just gets across the finishing line, but the finale for me is far too overcooked. It's by 20 minutes too long. The first time I really properly checked my clock, but that didn't bring my full clock in with me. I checked my watch. It was about 20 minutes in. I was like, right, there's another 20 minutes. This that goes like, how are you going to keep this going? I don't know. Do you have that problem?
I did. I was in work the other day and someone asked me, how long is this? And I said 2.5 hours, because that's genuinely how I felt long. And then I checked and it was only an hour and 59 minutes.
If it was 90 minutes, I think I'd love this.
Yeah. It's this generation's Smoking Aces.
Oh, there's a...
Stick on the poster.
Yeah, there's another poster for you.
There's one cameo that I thought was fun until it wasn't. It just becomes a gay joke.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? That I was like, nah, that doesn't really fly these days. And then there was a sequence that I thought was... throwing Deadpool to the character of Domino.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that actress may or not be in this as well, but her character, her whole arc is that like she has luck. It's luck-based powers. And there's a couple of sequences in this. Brad Pitt's character kind of feels like he has either good luck or bad luck. Like things happen to him because of his luck. And there's a sequence in this specifically towards the end when something happens. I'm making a sign to Jim of things that happen, but it looks like I'm doing
looks
something
quite
naughty.
Sexual, to be honest with.
Something happens, and I was like, "Oh, that's just David Leitch." Went, "Oh, do you remember that bit in Deadpool 2? I'm gonna do that again."
Yeah, there is also a sequence with a Japanese toilet that just felt like, is this like from 1950s or 1960s? Like how outdated is it? It's not perfect. I said at the start, like, Brad Pitt leads an impressive ensemble. You mentioned something like Smoking Aces. It just shows you what a difficult thing that is to pull off. And I just think, I know that the London Film Festival, I know we're out of the movie news section, but like I think the London Film Festival is opening with the Knives. It's either opening or closing, I can't remember from the email. It's either opening or closing with the Knives Out sequel at the festival. He showed what you do with an ensemble cast. You get everyone working to their strengths. I think this, by and large, does that as well. Not to that same degree. I think there's other filmmakers have tried to get, let's get a massive star-studded cast. Like, what was that film out?
was it a couple of years ago with like Jeff Bridges, and they're all at a, like a hotel, and there's all stuff going on.
Hotel Artemis.
And you're like, it's like, oh, it's.
It wasn't Jeff Bridges. It was a big pile of shit. Jeff Goldblum.
No. Jeff Bridges is in Hotel Artemis. Yes. No. It's not Hotel Artemis. I know the film you're thinking of. Yeah. That is a big pile of shite because that is Jodie Foster, I think, is in that as well.
And Batista?
Yeah, let's say he's in it. Let's give him if he's not. There's another film with Jeff Bridges, and it's like a hotel. It's like one of these hotels. It's all like these weird points.
Yes. I was actually thinking of that while watching it. It had John Hamm in it.
Yeah.
El Royale.
Yes.
Something El Royale.
That one. Email in. If you add that to the list of things you've got to email
Chesney
in.
Chesney Hawk was in it.
Toya Wilcox. we were in it for no apparent reason.
Yeah, it's really weird.
But it shows you what a difficult thing it is to pull off that ensemble cast when you have so many A-list talent. And I wouldn't say all over here is A-list talent, but there's a good bit of talent on screen, probably getting a sizable paycheck for showing up. And it doesn't always work. I think this, by and large, does. It just needs to be a bit like Quentin Tarantino. So many of the films now, it needs to be, you know, edited with a chainsaw. It needs to get cut down and say, right, how long does this film need to be? 90 minutes. That's what it's going to be, David. 90 minutes. Oh, but we're going to do this big over-the-top sequence with the train. It's like, no. If you can fit it in the 90 minutes, do it. You've got to cut something out. Because I genuinely was enjoying it. I thought Brad Pitt reminds me of all the things I love about Brad Pitt when you kind of see him, like, yes, in Hollywood, what's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, True Romance, that kind of stonerish kind of vibe that he can do. He is a charismatic leading man. Like you've alluded to, meaning with Ocean's 11, the Ocean's films, you know, he can eat on screen like nobody else can. He by and large holds the screen when he's there. I think Aaron Taylor Johnson does a good job. Other people that are there do an equally impressive job. I've seen on song. I still say this: you look at Knives Out as the gold standard in recent years of what you do with an ensemble cast.
But, Hero from Heroes, isn't it?
Hero is from Hero.
I think that's
like,
who it is.
Yeah, and like nobody knows that actor's name. I'm sorry, because I literally came home to my lovely wife and just kind of went, "You liked it? Why?" Hero from Heroes in it. And she's like, is that why? It's like, yeah, you liked Heroes, didn't you? She's like, yeah. It's like, yeah. And then the wee girl from The Conjuring is in it too.
Oh, Julie Adams.
Yeah, who I thought she was fab as well.
She is pretty good, but it's she is good, but then it's also like she's dressed as a schoolgirl. And it's like, all right, let's come on.
It's like, I felt bad. But, you know, let's go into my little layers of shame. So, yeah, you know, so this is how we're going to end every section at this point. Is it good, mate? Right?
Does it have hero in it?
No. So the key questions we're going to ask is not like a Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel kind of thumbs up, thumbs down. Adam, is it good, mate?
No.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say, you know what? Right now, because there's fuck all else out in the cinema. If you don't want to go see a Marvel film, if you don't want to go see
Super Pets,
and if you don't want to go see Downton, I don't know if Downton's still in the cinema, or like last night, if you don't want to go see the Westlife concert, I always come back to, is it worth your cinema ticket? And I think for what, 5-6 quid, I will see better films this year. I've seen a lot worse films, like Jurassic World Dominion, whatever the fuck it's called. I'm looking at you, Doctor Strange. I'm looking at you, Thor, Love and Thunder. I'm looking at you. I think this is a better film than that, but it's not anywhere going to be in my top 10, top 20 of the films this year. So that's I'm going to say yes, you're going to say no. So with that, let's move on to our pick of the streams, and that is Prey.
Why do you want to hunt?
Because you all think that I can't. I saw a sign in the sky. I'm ready. Mamoy Nita.
So that's a clip of Prey. It's directed by, I'm going to go with it, Dan Trachtenberg. There we go. Big smile on my face. My English teacher would be really proud. This is the Predator prequel, I think, was originally under the name Skulls, I think it was at one point it was referred to. So this is set 300 years before the events of Predator. We have, it's set in Comanche Nation, I'm going to get the name, Naru, played rather fantastically by Amber Mid-Thunder, if I'm getting her name right. What an amazing name. If that's not an actor's name that you've just given, your parents just rock. Say like Amber Mid-Thunder. If she doesn't make it as an actress, she can just be a great porn star. But sorry. So I digress. So this is Prey. As I said, it's the kind of prequel that probably we didn't think we needed. Well, not really a prequel, just a new direction for the Predator franchise. I don't know if generally, I mean, I think we should talk about this film first and then kind of see where it lies in relation to the other installments in the Predator franchise. Generally, Adam, what do you think?
I really liked this. I thought the one standout to me, well, two standouts, the score, I thought was fucking excellent. Like, this morning coming in, I was like bopping out. I was like, this is a great score. And the dog, the best boy in all of Hollywood. Mm. I loved the dog. But really good movie. A movie that I wish was in cinemas. You know,
yep.
It's that thing of, whenever a movie comes on streaming now, I really struggle to sit down and watch, and not the actual like watching it, but like the effort of being like sitting down and being like, right, I'm gonna watch this for an hour and a half and I'm gonna enjoy it. And it's harder with dramas because you're like, I could go on my phone, play games. With this, it's kind of like, oh, it's another Predator movie, damn. Then actually sitting watching it, I was about 30 minutes in and was like, this fucking rocks. My girlfriend was like, this is pretty good. I thought this was going to be shit. This is pretty good.
You have chose well, Adam.
I know.
Every film you like, she likes.
Her favourite movie is Barbie and the Nutcracker. So
nobody's perfect.
Yeah. So I think it's the best Predator movie since the original.
Wow.
I know. That's like saying this fart smells better than the rest. But it really is, it's like a movie that shouldn't exist. It's like a big franchise movie where a little known director, like a couple of people might know him from
Cloverfield Lane.
10 Cloverfield Lane. He was on the Totally Rad Show on YouTube for years.
Didn't he do the Portal short as well, he which did, I remember really liking as well.
Directed the first episode of The Boys as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he just seems like a really genuine guy. He seems like fucking one of us. He would walk about wearing his Joker t-shirt and be like, there's my badge. and I think that he has a big career ahead of him as long as he gets to kind of do his own thing, because this could have been a real clusterfuck of Fox going to Disney, Disney owning Predator, they being like, you're going to have to set up a franchise, that's what we do here. And he kind of have
a TV spinoff.
Yeah.
A Disney Plus spinoff.
We need to know about all these Native American characters.
They all speak perfectly good English.
Unless you watch the dub version.
Well, yeah, I want to come back to that because I couldn't, because apparently there is a Comanche version that you can watch. I couldn't find it on the sub. I could only get like Spanish and as my options on Disney Plus.
If you come out, it'll be like outline, go to extras.
Okay.
Says fully Comanche version.
Okay. So can I ask you at this point, what version did you watch?
The Comanche version.
I think I would have preferred that. Mm-hmm. Although I know my lovely wife would have refused to watch it because she likes to crochet.
Mm.
And of course, listeners, I'm doing the hand gesture, which is actually not crocheting, it's knitting.
Yeah.
But this is how I understand crocheting to be. But she always likes to knit. And it was like whenever Squid Games was on Netflix, she's like, I'm not watching the subtitle version, like, why? Because I have to watch it then and read it. It's like, I don't want to read a movie. And you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. It's like, you've chose well. I don't know. I mean, I've married my lovely wife, so, you know, I've made that choice. But if it's subtitled, I usually have to watch it on my own. It's like, if it's a subtitled film, foreign language, if it's a Queen, she's like, yeah, you go on your own. It's like, thanks, love. Love you. But I watch it in English because she was watching it with me. And I find it really actually distracting that they spoke, and I don't know why. I don't want to be that kind of pretentious kind of person, but it's like I would have loved this to be kind of like Mel Gibson's Apocalypto kind of. And I think then they do the two, they, it's a bit like kind of quite Italian giallo. I mean, they did two versions of it, didn't they? Yeah. They did it in English and they did it in fluent and kind of Comanche. So I probably will rewatch it. Despite my niggle that it was all, like, the version I watched was in English, I really liked it. I have a few reservations. I think the CGI isn't quite there at times, and it just shows you what a landmark the original was. Isn't it Rick Barker, or who was it? Did the special effects, the practical effects? Upon it, email that into us, listeners, as well.
Chesney
Hawks, yeah, and A1, and they all did it as well. But it just shows you what a masterclass and how great practical effects, when they're done well, how much of a legacy they leave an imprint on you. There is a lot of, particularly the Predator, when we see him realised through CGI, and I get that. I mean, there's a sequence with a predator and a bear. You're not going to put a person up against a bear. Like, even, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio didn't do a real bear in The Revenant. Didn't do, that sounds wrong. That was my niggle. I mean, at times, like, I just find it was like too CGI. But other than that, those are the two niggles I have. I thought this was a fucking pretty solid film. Not remarkable. I mean, not stunning by any way. Like you, I would love to have seen it at the cinema on the big screen with a big, massive sound system, a professional sound system with that score. Like you, I think it's great. You know, we were talking earlier, we didn't mention the score for Joker. I'm just going to throw it in. I mean, that's one thing I do remember about that, about Joker, the score of that film being absolutely stupendous. I like this. I think Amber Midthunder is great in the leading role. There's quite a Ellen Ripley vibes from her. Of course, that's maybe nothing original. I mean, they've probably knowingly done that. This woman trying to survive in a man's world. Oh, you're not a good enough hunter. Am I though? I've got a dog. We're going to hunt. I really enjoyed it. I did find it a bit weird, the kind of look of the Predator. And I think the director said, well, it's set 300 years in the past. So clearly, like, the only thing that they've evolved how to make good face masks rather than using skulls, but every other bit of kit that they have, it's still as good 300 years later. So just all the Predators have evolved in 300 years to do is make better, cooler looking face masks.
Yeah.
That's it. I liked it. I mean, I'm not going to say, I mean, anything else you kind of feel, I know we've been quite flippant here, you know, and kind of maybe rushing through the film, but
There's a few things I don't like. And one, I don't know if it's a callback to the original Predator. It's something I hate in the original Predator. I think the original Predator is one of the best movies ever made.
It's because they all kind of every so often go, anytime.
Oh, I love that. the guy shaving himself for no reason. In the original Predator, Arnie gets in the mud, right?
Yeah.
Covers himself in the mud. And then the Predator can't see him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you should cut, but they don't. Arnie goes, the mud, he could not see me. And then it cuts to the McLean advertisement because you're watching it on film 4.
Yeah.
In this, they set up the whole thing of, like, she has this, like, drug. It's just like, don't take too much of it because it'll clot your blood, blah, blah, blah.
Drugs are bad, okay.
And
I said that in fluent in Comanche.
And in the movie, she takes it and then isn't seen by the Predator, and then it's like, the drugs, he couldn't see me. And I was like, it's show don't tell, it's not show and tell.
I didn't mind that as much as you. I mean, I will say this, my heart died a little whenever there's a sequence early on where she's just basically out for a hike, I think she's hunting, and she falls into this pit of mud, and you see her suddenly getting deep down. It's like, I was going to go, oh, for fuck's sake, is the Predator going to appear? And she's like, it doesn't see her because she's covered in mud. It doesn't set that up, but it does, not foreshadow, but it sets up something later on that I think is like, all right, okay, that's quite clever. But I did die a little, but I was like going, oh, no. Because I was like, I'm really enjoying this. Mm-hmm. It's like, please don't suddenly descend into, here's a little nod and a wink to the here. There is a big nod and a wink, and I picked this up through, I'll not lie, IMDb trivia to Predator 2.
Yeah.
That's
Danny Glover appears.
Yeah, Danny Glover is just like, I'm still too old for this shit.
It's still so hot.
Sorry. But yeah, what I liked, another thing I will like, I know you've mentioned that one line that I didn't pick up on. Here's an installment in the series. What is it, the fifth? Let's not bother with the Alien versus Predator stuff. Okay. Although some of the special effects, I think they're handled by the same team that did is it Alien vs. Predator Requiem or whatever the fuck it was called?
I've watched that movie, but I can't see anything that's going on.
So you didn't feel the need to go back to watch it three times to see if you could still see anything? Nope, still can't see anything. Oh, that's the pretty alien. Oh, it's going to be so cool when you were like a five-year-old watching Alien. It's like, oh, that's really shit.
I think that's the movie that killed pirate DVDs, yep. Requiem, because it was like, I don't remember seeing pirate DVDs, but I don't understand. In the cinema, it'd be like...
Now, when you say pirate DVDs, you don't mean like pirate DVD cases dressed up like Jack Sparrow?
Or, I mean someone standing with a briefcase on Ann Street,
yeah,
getting ready to run because the pillars are coming. When you record in a cinema, obviously you're going to get like the heads coming up and stuff. Mm-hmm. No, we never get that anymore. It's always fucking Blu-ray rips of movies that came out 4 seconds ago in the cinema. But I think that the Requiem pirate copy... Everybody complained so much that it was so dark, and they just went, it's not our problem, it's Hollywood, boys. That they, it's the whole Jerry Seinfeld, I can do a better job. They're here to record.
I love your angles. Oh, there we go. Throw in a Seinfeld reference. Well done, Adam. But this is the thing, come back to that point. Yes. And I'm not disagreeing with you because Requiem is a pretty dark movie, not in its tone, but just visually. It's a dark, dark film. And it's shit as well. But come back, well, the point that I did, I think some of the special effects are a little bit like that, because I think it's maybe the same team, and that was maybe a thing, like there's that sequence with the bear that I think should look amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, CGI is not great. And that's not just a problem with Prey. I mean, I've mentioned earlier on Doctor Strange, I've mentioned Thor. There's this whole big discussion going on within Hollywood about the standard of CGI and the fact that big studios are just outsourcing it to the cheapest people they can get, and at times it looks shit. Like I mentioned as well, Jurassic World Dominion, there's times in the special effects and that looks terrible. But even digressed even slightly further back to the point that I made, so I was talking about practical effects, then I was talking about something else. I like the fact, come back to what you said, I didn't pick up on that reference to Arnie in Predators, like, oh, if I take the drugs. You can't see me. She didn't talk like that. Apologies, Amber.
You didn't watch the other version, you see?
No, I didn't watch. It's weirdly fluent command. She just sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger talking. It's like, get to the chopper! Oh my God, I didn't know. It's such wonderful Cantonese. Comanche. Sorry, such wonderful Comanche. No, here's an installment, whatever it is, the fifth or whatever. What? One, two, three, four. Yeah, Shane Black. Yeah, the fifth installment in the series that doesn't feel the need to kind of throw in, like I really jokingly kind of went, anytime. References, nods and a winks to the other installments. They are there. Like clearly the one you've mentioned, the one I've mentioned that I found through IMDb trivia. They're subtle and that's the way they should be done. It shouldn't be just going, like I'm going to pick a film I don't like and it's not because they're girls. Ghostbusters Afterlife. Where it's kind of go, let's just, oh no, sorry, not, well, I didn't like Ghostbusters Afterlife anyway. It was another film, I was like, nod and a wink, movie reference, eh? Ghostbusters, whatever, the Answer the Call,
Answer, not the, call, yeah.
Answer the Call, it was like, it's a whole different film, it's a whole different film, whole different series, nothing exists. Here's Bill Murray for you, here's Dan Aykroyd, he's still not afraid of ghosts, and all this stuff, and you're like, you don't need just to go, here's a movie. It's the equivalent of a Family Guy joke.
Yeah.
It's that sense. And it takes me, I think, and I'm glad that we didn't have that. I think, like you, I'd love to see Prey in the cinema. I think it deserved to be seen in the cinema. Maybe down the line, it might be possible to arrange screenings off it. I know we do film screenings with Banderflix back in the time pre-pandemic. Maybe that could happen. But I liked it. I didn't necessarily love it. But I, coming back to what you said about this fart smells better than that last fart, it probably is without a doubt the best fart. I mean, it's the best fart since the first fart. And usually if you've done five farts, by the time you've done the first fart, you need to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
Right? You need to like walk. It's like you need to walk quite quickly to the toilet.
But this is a clean wipe.
Yeah, it's a clean wipe. It's a clean drop. There's nothing going on there. I don't really want to go with that reference, but I quite like Predator 2. It's flawed. What I love about Predator 2 is they tried to do something completely different.
Yeah.
They genuinely came in and said, right, let's take it from someone you can imagine, someone to say, let's take it to the urban jungle. And you're like, all right, okay. Let's do a lot of kind of voodoo stuff and a lot of kind of stuff, and Danny Glover, and oh, what do you call that actor that's absolutely loop-de-loop in real life, who plays like the, he was going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, but then he didn't come back. Emil N, you know, Emil N, please. There's a lot of batshitness going on in that film. I also have a soft spot for Predators. Is it Robert Rodriguez?
He didn't direct it.
He produced it. He produced it. I quite like what they tried to do. And you've got Topher Grace in there. He's playing a kind of the villain. He's a better villain than he was in Spider-Man 3. The one that is the proper shit show is Shane Black's The Predator. Mm. There was a lot of problems with The Predator. Olivia Nunn didn't look like she had the best of time making that film. I don't think anybody had a lot of fun making that film. I mean, you consider it's the guy that wrote The Predator, and you think that that's going to be a perfect... Sometimes it happens. Things can be... seem like they're too good to be true. Shane Black directing a Predator movie. On paper, that should be amazing. It's shit. It's... if that's your fourth fart, you know you've got to go to the toilet, and that will not be a clean wipe. You will be there for a while, my friend. But I don't know. I mean, where do you rank those? I mean, you've clearly said this early on. This is the best fart since the first fart.
Yeah.
But where do you rank those other Predator films?
I would say Predator, Prey, Alien vs. Predator. Because I just like Spud in that movie. Not Lady Gaga. What other ones? Predator 2.
Predators,
and then The Predator.
Because I know Joe McElroy, who you love dearly, and want to hold for you, want to have a dance like Lady Gaga and Joaquin Phoenix did in the promotion trailer with you and Joe. He went back and rewatched them all before Prey, and I'm glad I didn't.
Mm.
I didn't want to go back. I love Predator. Predator is just a really simple film, although I still yearn for the release of the Jean-Claude Van Damme version of the monster rather than what we currently. I'm going to say Rick Barker. I don't know why I'm just going to say that name out there as the practical effects. And there's going to be someone listening to this going, you are a wanker, Jim. Of course it's not that guy. But apologies, email in. Fuck you. But I want to see the original version with Jean-Claude Van Damme as the monster. That's the dream. It's like I want to see the other version of Batman Forever, the Joel Schumacher cut. I want to see that because, you know, Val Kilmer's Batman deserves some love. Yeah, I mean, it's a perfect film. You can't really replicate it. I like what they did with Predator 2, but this is without doubt. This is what I think at the time this trailer for Prey was released. I think we had you on the TV show, and I said, like, this is what more franchises need to do. Not rely on nostalgia, but try and do something different and do something interesting and something low budget.
Yeah.
With the Terminator franchise, like, you don't need to have Arnold back. You don't need to have him back by now. You don't need to have Sigourney Weaver. I'm not saying that. Well, you don't even have to have Sigourney Weaver coming back for the Alien movies to work, because I know, wasn't it the Joel Blomkamp was going to have Hicks coming back?
Neil?
Joel
was his brother.
Yeah, Joel was his brother. Less talented brother. Neil Blomkamp was going to do his Alien 5 or Alien 4, whatever the fuck it was going to be. He was going to bring Sigourney. But you don't need to do that. You just need to say, right, let's rip it all down. And this is what they've clearly done with Prey. Bring it all back down to the basics. And it's like, right, you've got Predator, bad. Person, good. Let's give them a dog. And let's have that person try to survive the Predator.
I think it's the ultimate. Every movie in the last 5 years that has tried to give you the nostalgia feels of an original, I've hated them all. You know, your Jurassic.
Even Top Gun?
Yep.
Ooh.
I've not seen it, but I'm just saying.
All right, all right.
I've never seen the first Top Gun, Jim.
All right, okay.
I don't have any nostalgia. Jurassic World, Spider-Man, I talked about this on the show. Mm-hmm. I don't hate Spider-Man, but the whole, like, it opened the door to be like, here's the old actors that you like. Here's Patrick Stewart in X-Men. Here's fucking Bill Murray in Ghostbusters. You know, it's annoying. But this brings back a nostalgic feel for...
what you liked about the film. Well, not so much the aspect of the things that you like, of people being... like, I get the sense of, like, the aspect of a group of people being hunted by this unseen menace. And it's not kind of like, you son of a bitch. not having that in.
But it also has the... I remember watching Predator with my dad.
Did he like it?
He loves Predator. Yeah. That's on his list of things he'll watch, including Green Mile and Schindler's List. No matter what time of day, he'll watch it all.
And Joker's like, oh, for fuck's sake, is it fourth time we've got to watch it, son?
It's 4K, Dad.
It's a limited edition steelbook.
He's bouncing down the steps.
When you open it, it plays the Gary Glitter song.
I watched Predator and didn't know the Predator was in it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Because I was so young that I was like, this war movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Sweet. And then, what's all this thermal shit? Oh, an alien? Class. This has the same...
Edgar Davids.
What?
It's a movie. It's a football reference, sorry.
Me being a big nerd. Who?
Who is this you talk of?
But see if you stumbled upon Prey in like 2 years' time on Disney Plus. Say it wasn't in like a Predator collection. It was just you're scrolling through the movies and here's Prey. And it literally says in the bio... Comanche Wars or whatever are hunted by a predator in the thing. If you weren't like in the predator mood, you'd be watching it being like, oh, this girl is in this camp and she wants to be war chief. Oh, she can do it just as good as the boys or whatever. And then halfway through you would have that, oh fuck, there's a predator in this. And not the type of predator that was in the Predator.
Yeah, and not the type of predator in Hunting for a Predator, whatever that series was called. Actually, that is like that weird like 90s shows like people with groom cute kids online and is it Hunting for a Predator, whatever it's called. Like I'm surprised Family Guy have never done that joke or something like that. It's like where a predator just shows up in someone's house. Take a seat.
The cookie guy. Why don't you take a cookie? That was a predator noise. I don't know what that was.
I miss being in the studio with people. You don't get this by Zoom. I don't even know what noise that was. So I think we largely enjoyed Predator. We love Predator. We really like Prey too. Yeah. Sorry, I've lost myself. Right. So I think largely I think we're really positive about Prey. Like you, be interested if someone just stumbled across that film, had no clue of any preconceptions of what it was, had never seen another Predator, you can enjoy it. You don't need to come in going, here's a nod and a wink to this, a nod and a wink to that. So, yeah, so I think, come back to the point. I think we know the answer here, Adam. Is it good, mate?
Yes.
And it's a yes from me. So I think that's, if we were doing the TV show, we'd have our film of the week. I think without a doubt, I think Prey would be our film of the week. But this is what we're going to do differently. So this is our pick. Our first pick of the stream was Prey. I picked this just because it happened to be released. But Adam, you're going to have the pleasure now. Next week, we're going to be talking about Nope, but you get to pick our pick of the streams for next week. So before you reveal what it is, let's play a clip off the movie.
A bomb exploded on a railroad bridge outside of Madras, India, sending a passenger train hurtling more than 200 feet down a mountain slope. Railway officials in New Delhi said the bomb had been wired to the suspension bridge and had been detonated by a remote-controlled device. 120 people were reported injured, at least 22 people dead. Commercial? I wish I were one of them.
Okay, so that's a clip of Adam's pick for next week. What is the film? Because this really segment doesn't work. And this format for me introducing from a clip doesn't work, Adam, because I don't know what it is. I don't know what the film is. So this is the point where now you revealed to us what is your pick of the streams.
Can't wait to see what clip you pick for this film. As a thank you for having us back. We're in a lovely place, and of course you're working in Q Radio doing the news.
Yeah,
on the daily. Well, what time is it? Is it just all day?
Yeah, all day,
all day long. I have picked the brilliant Broadcast News.
Oh, what a film!
That's on Disney Plus. Albert Brooks, Holly Hunter. Such a fucking good movie. That I feel like doesn't get enough love these days. But Broadcast News is my pick, and I hope you and Joe enjoy it.
I haven't seen that film in a long, long time. It's one thing, actually, I do love. I mean, we're going into kind of movie news, kind of rambly tangents to kind of finish up the show. Weird, because I've signed up to Paramount Plus and Disney Plus. I have, although Tesco Club cards, been paying for that for like the last 6 months. I like the fact in Disney Plus there's, on those, particularly the newer streaming sites, there's such an impressive back catalogue of older films that I'm kind of losing the love a little bit for Netflix, other than kind of beyond Stranger Things and what's the other one I've been watching, Most Hated Man on the Internet, kind of documentary series like that I've been watching, or I forget what it's called. That shows you how well I've been paying attention. But yeah, I've been watching a few older films, Paramount Plus. They've got all the latest Scream movies on there as well. I didn't like it that much, but that says about me more than anything. And Disney Plus have it out, because of course, when you're a studio like Disney and you've bought Fox, you have an impressive back catalog. So that is a cracking choice. So we're going to be talking about that next week. So that pretty much brings this podcast to an end. It's been great to be back. I've had a lot of fun. So you have a whole list of things you've got to email us in and talk about. We'll not go through it again, but if you've been paying attention, email us in all those facts and let us know for ideas for little features and segments in the show. And all that's really left for me to do now is thank you very much, Adam.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week with another podcast. But for now, until then, goodbye.